Now is the time to put in place those systems to absorb those young people that we keep seeing in the statistics for 2050. We can't wait till then to begin to put in those systems. We need to put it in now.
Hello and welcome to the Brentas Foundation podcast, where we throw light on some of the African continent's biggest and most pressing issues and leverage best practice, not just on what to do, but how to do it. I'm your host, Marie Noel Ngokolo, and it's a pleasure to share in this moment with you. If you're new here, welcome. It's nice to have you here. If you're a regular, hey, how's it going? So this is the podcast where I share a lot of the super interesting conversations I have with really cool people. I'm a firm believer in sharing ideas that shape and challenge the world as we know it. My hope is that these conversations, where you get to be a fly on the wall, start further and deeper conversations wherever you are and lead to the exploring of actions and ideas that actually work and make a difference. So without further ado, let's get straight into it. Again, I'm Marie Noel and you're listening to the Brentas Foundation podcast. All right, so 1/5 of the global population under the age of 25 now resides in a rapidly growing sub-Saharan Africa. And if we pursue business as usual of not creating the kinds of employment that would keep people preoccupied, as well as allow them the financial ability to live their best lives honestly, we may be in for some trouble. But with the right education and training, this young African population could be a great asset for development and provide a comparative advantage in world markets. On today's episode, I have with me the head of youth employment and skills at the African Center for Economic Transformation, ASET. Mona Idrisu is a remarkable woman with a heart and a mind to do the work it requires to build knowledge systems and create platforms for exchange and action. In this chat, I hope to explore the topic of what needs to be done at the macro level to address the many challenges of youth employment on the continent. I think you're going to love this chat, so stick around. But without further ado, let's go straight into the chat with Mona Idrisu. Mona, it's good to have you here. Welcome, welcome.
Thank you, Marie. It's good to be here, and I'm looking forward to the conversation. So. Yeah,
no, it's going to be a great one. I can tell you that for sure. All right. So to get us started, Mona, I thought we could spend a minute to play a very quick game to sort of get the audience familiar with who you are. Are you ready?
Yes.
Okay. So what was the first job on your resume?
Oh, my first job. So that would be an internship I took in 2009. Working at the Institute for Demographic Governance in Ghana, Accra. So yeah, that would be the first one.
Yeah, awesome. How many languages do you speak, Mona?
Unfortunately, just about three. Yeah, no, because I speak just English, a bit of French, but, and then two Ghanaian languages, Chi and Dabani, because I'm Ghanaian.
Wow, that's a lot. More than one is a lot. I can tell you that. Do you have any hobbies or skills that people don't know about you?
No, I'm a plain book. I love to read. I love to read. I love music. I love taking spin class, if that counts as a hobby. But yeah, that's about it. Nothing exciting.
Oh, we learned something about Mona. All right, so what best describes your workday, Mona, if there's ever such a thing?
Oh, my goodness. So my workday is, you know, I'm one of those people who has notifications on my phone. Email notifications is terrible, but I do. So it means that I wake up, I pick the phone, I look, I'm like, oh, my God. And then I just go straight into work and I pause to prep for work and then get a bit of exercise and then I leave for work. And when I'm working from home, it's worse because then I just go right back into work and just keep working. That's usually what it is, but I try to maintain a balance.
No, it's definitely helpful. I have an interesting question for you. Are you a zero inbox type of person?
No. Guilty as charged. No, But I mean, I'm not the worst out there. I've had situations of people having 1,000 plus in their inbox. So yeah, no, I'm the one, I'm in the hundreds, if I can confess. And it's always those that I'm like, oh, I'm going to come back to this. I'm going to come back to it. And then I literally never do. So
yeah. I know. We're all guilty of that at some point. So Mona, what would you say is one skill that maybe you underestimated, but has served you like really well in your work or your career?
So I think it would be teamwork, to be honest. I think it, you know, when you're younger, you think you can do it all by yourself. But when you enter the world of work, you quickly learn that being able to play within a team and work together as a team is crucial. And you get to learn a lot from other people when you work as a team, and you get things done properly, you know. So I think it's one of those skills that I like to believe I have and has really paid off in my years of working.
Yeah, no, amazing. And what would you say was the last like aha moment you had and why?
Oh, my last aha moment. I think that would be, and this makes me sound like a youth nerd, but it's, I was recently reading on some statistics on youth unemployment. So unofficial, unpublished yet, but between the last census in Ghana and the last two census we've had, the most recent being last year, youth unemployment rate currently lies at about almost 30%. And I was like, oh, wow, from 12%.
Wow.
Yeah. So that was the most recent. That was, I think, on Tuesday. I was like, wow, okay, we need to do something about this.
Yeah, it's quite a bit of work required. So what comes to mind, and this is the last question I have for this, what comes to mind when you hear Africa in 2050? What's the first thing or first couple of things that come to mind?
Okay, so when I hear Africa in 2050, all I see is the youth demographic, you know, the demographic dividend, and just how many young people we're about to have on the continent, which means it's both exciting because we're going to have such a youthful population, but it also could be a ticking time bomb because, you know, it's like, okay, we have to get it right by then. We don't have the time.
No, that's you make such a good point of that. And I've also sort of written about this topic before. And it's like, you know, nobody's here to be, you know, like the prophet of doom, because it could really be a good thing. It has the potential to be so good. But if we go the rate that we are going, it could be slightly problematic, maybe a little more than slightly. But anyway, that sort of takes us into like the main conversation that I'm hoping to have. But I think, you know, it would be helpful. Your role, as I understand it, right, is largely preoccupied with sort of building knowledge and expertise, resources even, around the topic of youth employment and skills. Can you tell me a little bit about, you know, what that entails for you, and what are some of the key or emerging trends that you're seeing right now? And then we can sort of take the conversation other ways.
Okay, thanks, Marie. So I sort of stumbled into youth, if I can put it that way. I think it's spending the last couple of years working on areas related to youth, because you see, youth is such a cross-cutting topic. Right. So I previously worked in nutrition, in agriculture, in climate, and one day I was like, wait, actually all of this culminates because every time you pick any of these topics, there's youth in there somewhere. And then, you know, we've all had the recent statistics, you know, we've heard how by 2050, we're going to have an estimated 2.5 billion young people living on the continent. So one in every four people walking this earth is going to be an African. And even today, we have one in five people who are under 25 in sub-Saharan Africa. We are the world's youngest region as we speak. And then On the other hand, we hear that we have about, I mean, Africa needs to create about 3.1 million jobs per annum to absorb its current youth population. And we're not creating enough jobs. We're not, not even close to. We need to increase our job creation by a staggering 90% to be able to absorb our youth growth rate. And we also witness things happening like increased migration abroad illegally by young people trying to find greener pastures and all of that. So I think that for me, the spotlight on youth skills development and youth unemployment is increasing, and it's not for no reason. It's because it's an urgent matter.
No, definitely. And I think, you know, I mean, 3.1 million jobs per year need to increase by 90%. I think that's the part that's a bit more jarring. And I guess maybe you can speak a bit to, in terms of the work you're doing now, right, what should some of the strategies be for addressing this challenge and sort of managing this gap?
Okay. So this is a bit of a shameless plug here for Asset. So what the framework we use here at Asset is to look at this from both a supply and demand angle, right? So we have supply side factors such as skills deficits in young people. So we have young people coming out of education without the necessary skills. In a recent study we conducted, we find that about 20% of secondary school graduates are coming out without the necessary skills in ICT, in foundational literacy and numeracy even. And the more soft skills like communication skills, problem solving and the rest. And so we have the supply side issue where education systems in Africa are not adequately preparing young people for current jobs and future jobs. So that becomes an issue. We have a young continent, yet we have a deficit in digital infrastructure in our schools. And in our teacher training colleges, because if we're grooming teachers or training teachers who don't even have the necessary skills, they cannot pass it on to young people. On the supply side, we also have an issue with career guidance, you see. So there's weak school to work transitioning for young people because we're not deliberate about career guidance. So we're not being deliberate about it enough. So we have young people who do not even know where, you know, how to steer their career. And then we don't have transition frameworks to help young people get into the world of work. Now on the demand side, we're just not creating enough jobs, period. You know, it needs to be a broad-based approach to job creation, not just targeted at youth, but we're not creating enough jobs, and we're not creating the right kind of jobs as well. Because young people want a different type of job compared to what 20 years ago. And now we have jobs that young people are doing, like an influencer. It didn't exist 20 years ago. So yes, you know, all of this creates this bridge that we need to get over. Both at the demand side and the supply side to address this issue.
And I mean, I think you sort of make a point about, you know, this like idea of like a skills deficit and even trying to meet that. You know, we all hear about, you know, a better equipped, better abled youth. Like what does that look like? What would a sort of a highly skilled or a better equipped like youth look like? What is required to get that? Do you have some thoughts on that?
Yes, I think that it needs to be both technical skills and soft skills, right? So in research and in academia, this has been lumped together for the soft skills, calling it 21st century skills. And this includes problem solving, it includes leadership skills, it includes communication skills, you know, all of that. So a well-skilled young person should be one that possesses technical skills to deliver. So be it their technical training in engineering and nursing, in midwifery, and being an economist or lawyer, whatever it is. But at the same time, that young person needs to possess these soft skills, which actually sometimes play a larger role in the world of work for young people. And also the 21st century young person to be skilled needs to have digital skills. Digital literacy is you know, very important, because we live in an age where you can't do without. But again, we have schools that don't even have digital infrastructure, no internet connection, no access to computers. Yet we're trying to skill young people for the future of work.
Yeah, no, you make such a good point on that. And it's just like, even, you know, at a point, not even at a point, generally, it goes beyond even competing in the country, competing at a global level. And, you know, I remember there was a time in Ghana where there was, you know, this image of a teacher that basically had drawn like a computer on the board to teach. And I'm like, how do you, like, the practical realities of these things is just completely different from what it looks like in theory even. So how do you actually translate someone when they come out of that with, you know, haven't graduated, but can actually do the work? So it definitely is a major challenge. Something just popped to mind actually now, and was this idea of sort of, you know, the gig economy and doing jobs and bit. What are your thoughts on, you know, the impacts of those kinds of jobs when we think about, you know, productive jobs for Africa's youth or working population? Is that a good thing? Is it a bad thing? Is it both?
So both, I think. Both, because it can have its advantages, right? And in-house, again, I've been in conversations where, you know, related to this, which is around, okay, we say that we want technological advancement, but would that take away jobs? Is that going to create jobs on the continent if we fast forward to automation and AI and, you know, all of that? So the conversation really has been around labor-intensive technologies, promoting labor-intensive technologies. So technologies that are able to absorb our labor, our excess labor on the continent, especially for young people, being able to get, you know, jobs. Now, I think, again, related to that is that we have a large informal sector that we do not need to leave out of the conversation. So we have, Africa's informal sector is a potential to be tapped into. So we have the nature of jobs in Africa is slightly different. What young people are looking for is also slightly different. We have now young people are okay, you know, I don't need to work 9 to 5. Because young people want a lot more. Young people are not sticking in the same jobs for 3 years plus. On average, it's 2 years.
Yeah.
You know, so the nature of that, but I believe that, you know, the future of work already can absorb this, and it's not necessarily a bad thing. It's the markets will align. I'm an economist at heart, so the markets will align. We need to prepare young people for the future of jobs with the prerequisite skills.
Yeah, no, fantastic. So Moina, can you tell me a little bit about some of the like positive examples that we have on the continent of government or I guess policymakers that are taking sort of these steps to address youth employment, not just, you know, in theory or by rhetoric, but actually doing the work?
Yes. So to be fair to our governments, there's been a number of efforts in your countries, really trying to, you know, either youth reintegration programs where, so we call this subsection of young, well, not just young, but not in education and not in employment. And so we have like Niger that has played around with a number of youth unemployment programs designed to help young people reintegrate into the labor market, either through setting up micro enterprises. So they have a national agency for employment promotions. And then we have, again, instances like in Ghana, where we have the NAPCOP. So that's a Nation Builders COP, trying to, again, place young people into jobs.
Yeah.
And we have a number of these initiatives happening on the continent. Now, the good thing is that they're trying. Okay, governments are trying. And then we have also governments that are looking at the supply side. So, for example, we have Rwanda that is increasingly involving private sector players in curriculum development in their country. So what that means is that you're bringing private sector into the room in a more direct manner, potential employers, to design curriculums with them, meaning that the curriculums are more likely to respond to labor needs or labor market needs. Yeah. We also have interventions in, for example, in Tanzania and Uganda, where teachers are going on job placements and on internships, you know, so not just students. So teachers are taking on industry placements. And what that means is that teacher, because you know, a number of times we have teachers who move from the classroom to the classroom, if you get what that means.
Yeah.
From student training to teaching in the classroom, but without any work experience in the industry or in the labor market per se. So such a scheme ensures that teachers have that experience. If you're teaching in engineering, you go on an internship into the industry work, and then that gives them a better appreciation of some of the skill set that they need to equip young people with to survive in the world of work. So as you can see, there's some good examples happening out there, and I think it's a matter of scaling up some of these interventions and also building platforms for knowledge exchange, because these things tend to happen in packets, you see. So it's happening in packets in different countries, but having knowledge platforms for policymakers means that they're able to exchange these ideas and this knowledge. And another shameless plug, because we're running such an intervention that we call the Pan-African Coalition for Transformation, where we're trying to bring policymakers and different stakeholders on common platforms and when we share knowledge from our research and other evidence-based findings and getting them to dialogue, but even more than that, to be peer buddies, if you get what I mean. If Rwanda is doing something great, Ghana can learn from it, Tanzania can learn from it. And it doesn't even have to be formal meets. A WhatsApp group with all the employment ministers in one would be great, because then you get to share ideas.
No, that's such a good point, because you know, one of the things that has been sort of on my mind a little bit lately is this idea of, even when we're talking about, you know, the AFTA and this sort of regional integration and stuff like that, you know, the first thing is usually trade, but there are so many other ways as well that we could be better integrated, to learn from others, to you know, see what's working, what didn't work, and how not to do that, and things like that. And I think that's actually a pretty unique and exciting opportunity. I'm excited to see what comes out of that.
Yeah, I'm excited to see as well.
So I guess in terms of wrapping this conversation up, you definitely, I'm sure, have conversations with these kinds of people. But what would you say is the message that, you know, policymakers or people in sort of the political or government sphere don't seem to be getting about this topic that needs to be reiterated like all the time?
Yes, and this might seem hard-hitting, but
that's what I like.
Anyone is listening, the hard truth is that we are not ready for the future of jobs. We're not ready as a continent for the fourth industrial revolution. We're barely even making it for the current industrial revolution that we are in. So there are gaps that must be closed to strengthen education and learning to make Africa's workforce ready for the future of jobs. We don't have the time, it's urgent. Our young population is growing. We're going to have, now is the time to put in place those systems to absorb those young people that we keep seeing in the statistics for 2050. We can't wait till then to begin to put in those systems. We need to put it in now. So we don't have the time. It's a now problem. It's not a future problem. And so if any policymaker is listening, it's a ticking time bomb and we're not ready. We really need to get going on these reforms that are required.
That is such a fantastic point, and I'm glad you made that. I wonder if I can ask one, this is, I promise, the last question. If you were to be put in charge, take a hypothetical country, I guess, that has similarities to what the West African country of Ghana looks like, but not Ghana. We are working hypothetically. Knowing some of the challenges that the youth face, the challenges around job creation, what would you say are the top priorities that you would work on in the first, 1 to 3 years of that? How would you prioritize that? What would you look to do to try to set the country up to be much better able to deal with, the youth dividend, or what we hope would be a youth dividend?
Yes. And I should be ashamed that I've had this conversation to this point and haven't mentioned technical vocational education and training, because I'm a big fan of that. Yeah. The first thing I would encourage or I would do is instituting reforms to bolster TVET education, technical vocational education, and training on the continent, because the thing is that TVET holds a huge potential for providing the much needed skills we have for industrialization and transforming our economies. But it's the stepchild of education pathways we see on the continent. The image of TVET needs to be revamped. We need to invest and we need to value what TVET has and can provide our continent. So that's one area that needs immediate attention, increased investment in that. We also need to narrow our quality gap, bridging the skills gap, bring private sector into the room. So another immediate action that, won't cost as much is being deliberate about bringing wider stakeholders, so parents, even private sector into the room for curriculum development and pedagogical training. What that creates is that at least we're bridging that skills mismatch. We're having employers being able to put in or pitch in into saying these are the skill set that are lacking in the job market. We need to invest in labor market information systems, ASAP. What labor market information systems provide us is that we're able at every point in time, we're able to look at this is what the labor demand looks like. These are the sectors where we have shortages. These are the skills we have in excesses. Where do we retrain young people? Do we have too many doctors and yet too few electricians? Do we have too many hairdressers and yet too few, too little carpenters? Do you understand? So we're able to have a screenshot of where the labor demand and supply gap lies in the economy, and that provides us better planning instruments. These are the three areas that I would target immediately if given the opportunity in my hypothetical country.
Awesome. Mona, this has been an absolute pleasure and a fantastic conversation. Thank you for making the time for this chat. Definitely insightful, very helpful.
Thank you. Thank you, Marie. Thank you. It's been a pleasure. And it's always good to chat about something that keeps me up at night. So
well, hopefully we do make those choices and we make those changes, because as she said, it's the urgency cannot be understated. It needs to be done yesterday, so we can take today to make it work. But again, Mona, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you, Marie. Thanks for having me.
that brings us to the end of today's show. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did putting it together. I love learning new things. Hey, if you enjoyed this chat, you definitely enjoy others that came before it. Check out previous episodes on whichever platform you're tuned into now, or visit our website www.thebrenthurstfoundation.org for other episodes. As always, thank you so much for listening. And if I could make one last ask of you, please do share this with others. Again, you're listening to Marie Noel on the Brenthurst Foundation podcast, and it's been a pleasure sharing this time with you. Until next week, stay well.